Hey, Discos. Need a little more Disgraceland in your life? Just a touch to get you through? Yeah, me too. This is the podcast that comes after the podcast. Welcome to Disgraceland, the after party. Welcome to Disgraceland, the after party, a new unscripted mini show I'm bringing to you off the cuff on a bi-weekly basis to help bridge the gap between Disgraceland episodes. This little mini spin-off show is where I briefly discuss the most recent episodes of Disgraceland, Disgraceland subjects who are in the news, and to share extra content, deleted scenes, and ideas for future episodes. I also answer the occasional email and provide context on music I'm listening to, books I'm reading, and other culture I'm devouring at the moment, as this seems to be a constant question. Jake, what are you listening to? What are you reading, watching, etc.? All right, let's get into it. All right, I'm going to talk about the interview I did with Elton John and how it came to be in a minute. But first, I want to thank all the Disgraceland fans in Denver who banged out the Gothic Theater with me last weekend. Holy shit, that was awesome. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You were great. I had a blast. So did the crew. Can't wait to get back to Denver. All right, now, for some recent Disgraceland subjects who are making news, Courtney Love announced this past week that she and her former bandmates in Hole are, quote, definitely talking about a reunion. Hallelujah. Courtney, if you're listening, and I hear that you are, do this. We need more rock stars, and you're the real deal. Get up on that stage and in our faces where you belong. For those new Disgraceland listeners who might not be in the know, go back and check out Disgraceland episode 26 on Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love. Here's a quick sample of that episode. Hole had been the subject of intense courting by the major record labels. Indeed, the first full-fledged bidding war over an unsigned female-fronted band. Clive Davis and Rick Rubin lined up and were sent packing. The deal Courtney was striking was to become mold-breaking in its financial favorability for the artist, a female artist, her. A fact she took deserved pride in pushing into the face of any and all who brought the deal up in her presence. Sure, Mr. Sexist Label Suit and Tie Guy, you want to imply that my rock star husband is co-writing my songs because I'm a woman and I'm unable to do it myself? Then fuck you very much. The cost of my publishing just went up. And okay, Mr. Rock Journalist Dude, with your goatee, your mall-bought leather, and reader-tested, editor-approved list of boring questions, you want to ask me about my influences or what my thoughts are on grunge? My thoughts are it's a joke, just like you. And my influences are twofold, my inner labia and my outer labia. Those are my influences. Fuck off. And that was Courtney Love. And also, while we're on the subject of badass women who make music, Cardi B is releasing new music again and channeling her inner true crime diva, posing naked on the cover of her new single, Press, and then again handcuffed in a pose made famous by serial killer Aileen Wuornos. Cardi B is making it damn hard not to feature in an episode of Disgraceland, and more on that later. Back in a flash. Elton John. Holy shit, guys. I interviewed Elton John. Can you believe it? I can't. Still, I can't. It's nuts. Everyone's asking me how this happened. And to be honest with you, I still don't really know. It happened very fast. It involved a trip halfway around the world, literally, and a lot of anxiety. But in the end, it was totally worth it. And here's how it all went down. On Friday, May 24th, I'm in my studio early, catching up on writing before heading to the airport to fly to Denver for my show the next night. My friend Connell, who heads up podcasts for iHeartRadio, texted me around 9 a.m. He mentioned that Elton John might be interested in sitting down for an interview with iHeart to promote his new movie, Rocketman, and that because there was an awareness of Disgraceland with Elton, that there might then be an opportunity for me to do the interview. The catch was that it was in Europe. I can't tell you exactly where, which is why I'm keeping it vague. But the point is that it was super far to travel for one interview that, oh yeah, by the way, it could only be 30 minutes long. Fuck it. I was in anyway. I fucking love Elton John. Why wouldn't I want to sit down and talk to him? The other catch was that the interview had to be done in the next 48 to 72 hours, again, in Europe. But I was about to get on a plane and go in the other direction to Denver from Boston to play a show. So what? I called my business manager, Jamie, who kicks ass and managed to figure out travel to get me out of Denver on the next available flight after my gig to New York City, where I would connect to Europe. And so that's what happened. However, I knew that when I landed in Europe, I had at most 2.5 hours to get to where Elton was staying. And once I arrived, I'd only have 30 minutes to do the interview. The flight, getting through customs, getting into a cab, finding a cab, getting into it, and then the 60-minute commute from the airport. The situation was tight at best. And then the weather hit. And my flight was delayed out of New York City by 2 hours, making it so I'd land with less than an hour to get to Elton, which was never going to happen. And before my plane took off, I emailed Elton's management to ask them to push the interview back at least an hour. I heard nothing back and went to sleep on the overnight flight, convinced that I was flying to Europe for nothing, convinced that Elton's people would cancel the interview or find someone local to do it, and that I'd arrive and have to then turn right back and go home. A giant waste of time and a pain in the ass considering I'd just canceled a week's worth of meetings in Los Angeles that were supposed to happen after my Denver show. When I woke that morning on the plane, I checked my email and holy shit, Elton John agreed to wait. Cool fucking guy, I gotta say. In the end, the plane made up the time in the air and I eventually made it to Elton for the originally scheduled time and the dude could not have been cooler. We had 30 minutes and the questions needed to be focused solely on Elton's new movie, Rocketman. So there was no time for banter, no time for back and forth, no time for follow-ups. I was there to do a job and I was in the room because Elton had been made aware of Disgraceland through a mutual friend and because iHeartRadio needed that interview to blast across their radio stations. And if all went well, I'd be able to turn it into a podcast to blast out to you guys through my feed. I wasn't going to try to go on Marc Maron and fuck the interview up. I needed to stay on script and get what Elton and iHeart wanted. So that's what I did. We focused on the songs in the film, and that gave me a way into his backstory that didn't involve a lot of back and forth and wasting of time. And in the end, Elton gave me more time than was necessary, and he and his husband, David Furnish, were super accommodating. His movie Rocketman that the two of them produced is great and you should all go see it. And if you haven't yet listened to my interview with Elton, an interview that is kicking off a new iHeartRadio podcast series called Icons, you can listen to it now in my feed or in the Icons feed and subscribe to Icons on Apple Podcasts in the iHeartRadio app or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, here's a clip. How did you decide which of your many hit songs would be featured in Rocketman?
I didn't have anything to do with it.
Really?
I never had anything to do with the musical choices or anything. That was entirely down to the director, Giles Martin, who did the music, and Taron. One thing I did, they said, what's a fast number we should put in? They had a song. I can't remember which one it was. And then they said, what about Hercules? And I went, oh, yeah, that's great. Do Hercules instead. And they consulted me if there was something like that. But I just stayed away from it. I hadn't, you know, as I say, I didn't know what songs were going to be in it and I didn't care.
That's a lot of creative trust to put in your team.
Well, I think if you, a team of people who trust each other and you've got a brilliant creative team, I've always worked like that. I never tell Bernie what to write. I never tell my band what to play. The great thing about musicianship and collaboration is someone always comes up with something you would never have thought of. And it always usually comes up to be trumps. And, certainly with the music in this, I'm floored by the way the music sounds and the way they've done it. And, you know, these are very well-known songs with well-known arrangements. And what Giles Martin and Taron have done with them has left Bernie and I in a state of elation.
So there you go. That was me and Sir Elton John. Go check out his movie Rocketman in theaters now. And if you want to hear the whole interview, head over to the Disgraceland feed and also be sure to subscribe to Icons.
We'll be right back after this word.
Slick Rick, the ruler, is coming at you in next week's episode on June 11th. I loved putting together this episode. Any of the hip-hop episodes always get me worked up because hip-hop-styled scoring elements lend themselves perfectly to the podcast medium. And this one was a blast to put together. Here's a short clip from next week's episode to hopefully get you as excited as I am about it. Having arrived in the Bronx from London in 1976, right around the exact time and in the exact place that neighborhood MCs and DJs were inventing hip-hop, Rick was indirectly groomed to be an MC. DJ Kool Herc, Bambaataa, Flash, Rick, as a young man, had a front row seat to them all from his vantage point in the Bronx. And to Rick, rappers seemed to have it all. Respect, attention from the B-girls, music was pure joy, real freedom. There was a fire in his belly. This was the future. When Rick was a little kid back in London, he was shy. As an infant, a splinter of glass on the floor of his family's tenement apartment got in his right eye, scarring and blinding him. his need for an eye patch made him self-conscious, an introvert by necessity. Instead of running around the neighborhood with the other kids, he stayed in and read books, listened to music, and grew, naturally, into a storyteller. But in the Bronx, the things that held him back as a child had become his greatest strengths. Watching his parents struggle gave him drive and ambition. His soft English accent caught the attention of the ladies. And he adopted a whole new persona made of flashy costumes and bold fashion statements and turned his eye patch into his signature accessory. His years of practicing poetry and storytelling set him up to rock the mic effortlessly and with a different flow than anybody had heard previous. In a word, it was slick. He had glitz, gag, and hustle all his own now and a stage name to match. Slick Rick. All right, that's all you get. I'm stoked on this episode. Again, it's coming at you next week on June 11th, Slick Rick. So, all right, let's get into what I'm listening to and what I'm reading and what I'm watching. I just spun through my Spotify recently playlist and it's telling me that I've been listening to Hall & Oates, Chromeo, Elton John, Zapp, and T-Bone Burnett. Hall & Oates because my wife and I recently heard for like the gazillionth time Private Eyes, but it was like we were hearing it for the first time for some reason. And try to imagine that song as it sounded when it first hit airwaves. We take it for granted, but at the time, it was a pretty groundbreaking pop production. Pop production to me isn't just sugary, mainstream-friendly hooks that breeze the listener through verse, chorus, verse in under 3 minutes and 30 seconds. To me, great pop production figures out a way to meld the artist's influences with the modern sounds and technology of the day, all in a manner that is effortless and withstands the test of time. And oh yeah, has widespread mass appeal. Hall & Oates, like Prince and Tom Petty, did this as well as anyone else in the 80s. So yeah, I've been listening to Hall & Oates. And I've also been listening to Chromeo and trying to low-key start dance parties in my kitchen with my two sons. And of course, I've revisited Honky Chateau by Elton John. It's so damn good. And finally, T-Bone Burnett's new record, The Invisible Light, Acoustic Space. It's great. Check it out. And oh yeah, Zapp. Lots and lots of Zapp because I'm writing the NWA episodes. And Zapp featured heavily into the Big Lurch episode because of their G-Funk influence. And here's a clip from the Big Lurch episode, an episode that I consider to be one, if not the best episode of Disgraceland. All right, here's a clip. Lurch sat in the studio and took in the sounds around him. Banging. These West Coast dudes knew what was up. Producer, Roger Troutman Jr., son of legendary funk musician and founder of Zapp, Roger Troutman Sr., was dialing Lurch into what he was going for musically. Lurch could feel it. Musically, these California dudes had that West Coast vibe and 70s funk influence on lock. Zapp, the Brothers Johnson, Charles Wright and the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band, Shuggie Otis, even the fucking Doobie Brothers sounded good coming out of Troutman's speakers. Which Doobie you be, Lurch wondered. An existential question to be answered another time. Lurch was into it all, but his mind was wandering to a darker place. He had rented and watched Silence of the Lambs over the weekend, and Lurch couldn't get the movie out of his head. Hannibal, the cannibal, and what a sick fuck. Imagine that, eating another person. All right, there you have it, Big Lurch. What I'm reading, I've been reading about Elton John and Cardi B. Elton John for obvious reasons and Cardi B for reasons you can probably imagine. And my mind is blown. She's incredible. Just so fucking entertaining. What have I been watching? Watched Wine Country last night with my wife. New Amy Poehler movie on Netflix. Pretty damn funny. I'd recommend it. I'd give it a spin. Also watching on the plane, I watched I Love You Man, which I haven't seen in probably 5-10 years or whatever, the Paul Rudd, Jason Segel movie. It's fucking hilarious. I forgot how funny that movie is. That's it. Nothing heavy. These episodes I'm writing are heavy enough. I find that I need some levity and some lightness when I'm not absorbed in writing. So yeah, that's what I am listening to, what I'm reading and what I'm watching or whatever the hell I'm calling that segment. All right, back at you in a flash. Okay. Okay, email of the week is from Keith J. Keith says, Jake, love the podcast. Caught an ad on a random North Carolina radio station leaving Raleigh, heading back home to Texas this past Memorial Day weekend. Listened to the first episode around 9 a.m. on Sunday, and then my wife and I proceeded to binge listen to every episode. And this, of course, lasted for the entire 22-hour drive over 2 days. It was great and made the drive back to Odessa, Texas, that much more enjoyable and interesting. Keith, thanks, man. You're an animal. You and your wife are crazy. That's a lot of hours with my voice banging around the inside of your car. But in all seriousness, I really appreciate it, man. The fact that I get to make something that I love and put it out into the world and have it resonate with folks is so damn gratifying. And in all sincerity, thank you. And thanks to all of you listeners. I think you're the shit, which is why I'm going to now read to you the phone book. Okay, here you go. From the Chesapeake and Potomac Telephone Company of Maryland in 1962, covering Cambridge, Golden Hill, Hurlock, and Vienna. Page 20, covering beer to bicycles. Dover. Delaware's own Diamond State Drought Beer Bottles. Good for over 70 beers. Diamond State Brewery Incorporated. Call Wilmington 3-4258. Diamond State, 100% pure grain beer. Look for this label. Find a famous flavor. Whistle Bottling Company, East Front Street, Milford, Delaware. Beer and carbonated beverages. Pabst Blue Ribbon, Esslinger, Gunther's, Hornig's, Kruger, POS, Pepsi-Cola, Canada Dry, 7-Up. Just call Milford 304-W. Beer distributors, Diamond State Brewery Incorporated, 5 and Adams, Wilmington, 3-424. See advertisement this page. Whistle Bottling Company, East Front, Milford, 304. Quit talking and start mixing. Cut!